My guest at this time is Gail Trotter. She is a senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum. Several days ago, she made news while testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee as that panel considered new restrictive gun laws being proposed by Senator Dianne Feinstein and certainly advocated by the Obama administration. One of the highlights that received a lot of attention in that testimony was Gail's exchange with Rhode Island Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. During her earlier testimony, Gail had mentioned how a young mother had defended herself and her very young child from criminals by the fact that she was able to exercise her Second Amendment rights. Senator Whitehouse then tried to counter that the gun that she used would not have been affected by the gun ban, and this exchange ensued.
That Remington 870 Express is a weapon that would be perfectly allowed.
So would it have been unreasonable for her to use a different gun to protect her child?
I think that if she was using a 100 weapon, let me put it another way, she would clearly have an adequate ability to protect her family without the need for a 100 round piece.
How can you say that? You are a large man, and you are not a teenage, a tall man. You are not a young mother who has a young child with her. And I am passionate about this position. Because you cannot understand, you are not a woman stuck in her house having to defend her children, not able to leave her child, not able to go seek safety, on the phone with 911, and she cannot get the police there fast enough to protect her child. And she's not used to being in a firefight.
Gail, first of all, welcome to the program. And secondly, what do you think the nation learned if they were paying attention to that exchange?
Thank you so much for having me. The message I was trying to get across is that guns make women safer. And the idea is out there that guns are dangerous and that women should fear guns. But the reality is that more than 90% of violent crimes occur without a gun. So when women have guns, they're able to reverse the balance of power in these violent confrontations.
And so the skepticism on the part of Senator Whitehouse was that, well, there will still be legal weapons that you could use to achieve that shift in the balance of power. You are clearly suggesting that women ought to have more options.
That's right. And if you listen closely to his question to me or his comment, he was saying, well, wouldn't it have been adequate if she had the shotgun, which she successfully used? And the question that I asked him is, how can you say that it's not appropriate for her to choose another weapon that's in common usage? These AR-15s, there are over millions of them around the country. And so why are we focusing on what's adequate for a woman to use to defend herself instead of focusing on getting all guns and all bullets out of the hands of evildoers?
You also made a point in your testimony, I think it was under questioning from Senator Grassley on the Republican side, that there are a lot of things about the AR-15, including the cosmetic features, that women really like if they're ever in a life and death situation like that. Explain why just the look of the weapon, which is one of the things that advocates of this legislation are very critical of, is actually an asset.
Sure, that's right. And the New York Times had an article about this last week talking about AR-15s and why they're a weapon of choice. And they had these three points, that they're light, they're accurate, and they have this intimidation factor. And in the New York Times article, they said that AR-15s and their similar type of weapons, they look like something commandos would use. And my critics have said, well, you know, look, staring down the barrel of a handgun or a shotgun is just as scary as an AR-15. And you don't know what's going through the mind of a criminal when he sees something. So if the woman feels herself that she's more in charge, I mean, anybody who's in one of these firefights, even armed servicemen and police officers, it's hard when you're in that situation. Your body revs up, you get the adrenaline rushing, and the idea that this person, this woman who's not trained in, military combat might have more peace of mind having more firepower, I think that's a good thing.
Another issue that came up that's in the legislation that you kind of bandied about with Senator Whitehouse was the capacity of the magazines. Of course, the legislation wants a maximum of 10. He was saying you don't need 100. What anecdotal evidence do you counter that with to suggest that that type of capacity may very well be required?
Well, Senator Graham had a great point in the hearing, and I don't know if this was covered very much, but he said, one bullet in the hand of someone who's trying to harm other people is too many. And for someone who's trying to defend herself and her family, there's no real limit on what she should be able to have in that situation. It's not the bullet itself. It's not the gun. It's the intention behind the person who's trying to use it. And you look at that case in Georgia where the woman went up to the attic crawl space with her kids. She had a revolver. She had 6 shots. She shot the assailant 5 times. One assailant, she shot him 5 times. What if it had been multiple assailants? And then critics say, well, you know, usually it's not more than one assailant. Well, that's just not true. In my testimony, I had examples of multiple assailants. In fact, there was one case where there were five burglars trying to gain entry into a woman's house.
You talked about in your testimony and in that exchange that we just played, Gail, about how you are very passionate about this issue. Give our listeners a little bit of background about why you have become such an advocate on this issue.
Well, with my legal training, I've always been a student of the Constitution, and I think our constitutional rights have been very costly obtained, and we need to guard them very carefully. And so the mainstream media is out there telling women that guns are dangerous and that if we just give up, you know, on the margins, these little constitutional rights, that we will have a safer society. But when you look at the statistics, over 90% of violent crimes occur without guns. So even if you were able to remove all of the guns from society, which is not going to happen, that's not going to make violent crime go away. And when you talk about women being raped and murdered, you don't need a gun to rape or murder a woman or her children. And I think that that's why when I think of those stories, especially the one I brought before the Senate of Sarah McKinley, this young mom in her house, her husband has died. She's there with a very young infant. She's trying to do everything right. She's calling 911, and they can't get there in time. So those types of stories, they don't get highlighted by the mainstream media. It's the mass shootings, which, by the way, all of which, except for one, have happened in these politician-created gun-free zones. So we can see that the solutions that they're coming up with are not actually reducing violence in our society.
Couple more questions for Gail Trotter of the Independent Women's Forum before we let her go. Gail, immediately following that testimony, you were trending on Twitter. You were immediately castigated by a lot of folks on the left, a lot of folks on the right instantly became big fans of yours. What was it like for you to find yourself in that spotlight, in particular to take on a lot of venom from those who are in support of the legislation?
Well, I was very surprised about that, but I will say that this is not a partisan issue. It's very interesting because it kind of cuts both ways. I was contacted by a lot of very liberal Democrats who commended me for my courage to go up there and speak on behalf of women and their fundamental constitutional right to choose to defend themselves. And I got criticism. I got a lot of criticism, but, you know, some things are worth getting criticism for because they're so fundamental that we have to be brave and put our neck up there and speak about them.
The president, of course, closed his State of the Union address with a passionate plea to move forward on the legislation. Here's perhaps the best known part of his address on Tuesday night.
Gabby Giffords deserves a vote. The families of Newtown deserve a vote. The families of Aurora deserve a vote. The families of Oak Creek and Tucson and Blacksburg and the countless other communities ripped open by gun violence, they deserve a simple vote.
First of all, what did you make of his appeal for support based on that type of rhetoric? And what do you make of the fact that right now, at least, it looks like the assault weapons ban is probably not going to get very far?
I'm very pleased about that because I think that doesn't make any sense to put the assault weapons ban back in place when we had Columbine happen while the assault weapons ban was in place, and the Janet Reno Department of Justice found that the assault weapon ban had no measurable effect on reducing violence. So we shouldn't do something that has already been proven not to work and also restricts our fundamental liberties. And I think his rhetoric was very moving to the people in the audience. But if you listen carefully to the words he was saying all these people of gun violence deserve a vote. My response to him would be, no, all the people of gun violence deserve the laws that are already on the books to be sensibly enforced and to make sure we have strong and consistent penalties for violent felonies involving firearms. So, yes, you can take all the votes you want to have, but if we're not enforcing the laws that are already on the books, it's not going to make anyone safer.
Real quick, we mentioned that the assault weapons ban is looking unlikely to pass even in the Democratic Senate. What about on magazines and the background checks? How do you expect those to turn out?
I'm hopeful that they won't pass any of that, that they'll look at how they can tighten the existing gun laws and give more support to the states in enforcing these things. I think on the universal background check, a lot of people don't understand what that is. So they say, yeah, of course, a universal background check sounds great. But when you think about the federal bureaucracy that will be increased by doing that, the amount of money that will be spent, the fact that criminals will not subject themselves to federal background checks, and most importantly, that the background check system we have right now is not effective because the information is not getting from the states to the background checkers. I think when we consider all that, if Americans understood that, they would not be supporting universal background checks.
We'll certainly keep an eye on all of it. And Gail, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Gail Trotter is a senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.